My name is Dr. Ian Storch. I'm a board-certified gastroenterologist and osteopathic physician, and you are listening to DO or Do Not. If you're interested in joining our team or have suggestions or comments, please contact us at doordonotpodcast.com. Share our link with your friends and like us on Apple Podcasts, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We hope you enjoy this episode.
My name is Tom Jasinowski. I'm a fourth-year osteopathic medical student at the Chicago College of Osteopathic Medicine and editor-in-chief of the DO or Do Not podcast. In today's episode, we are joined by Dr. Patricia Motto, who is currently serving as the Associate Dean of Clinical Affairs at Virginia College of Osteopathic Medicine, or VCOM. She gives advice for pre-med students on the application process, what VCOM has to offer, and what they can expect as students, specifically during their clinical rotations. She continues on to tell us her journey and inspirations in pursuing osteopathic medicine, beginning from her undergraduate studies at Gannon University in Erie, Pennsylvania, to being a part of the inaugural class of the Lake Erie College of Osteopathic Medicine, or LECOM. Dr. Motto also explains her decision to work in academic medicine and leaves us with her philosophies on practicing medicine with great advice on how to be successful in a career as an osteopathic physician. We hope you enjoy this episode.
Okay, so welcome to the DO or Do Not podcast. Today we have Dr. Motto. Thank you so much for having this conversation with us today.
Well, I appreciate being invited. Thank you.
Absolutely. So without further ado, let's get into some of the questions. So the first question we have for you today is, for our pre-medical students that are listening to our podcast, can you tell us a little bit about VCOM? I know you mentioned that you just recently moved there, so what are some of your first impressions about the campus and the area?
First impressions were great. Not only the weather, but the strong sense of community. And where I have worked before, same thing. You know, I was looking for a sense of community and connection. And with VCOM, with the four campuses, it was the perfect place.
That's awesome to hear. And it's good that they have so many different varieties for campuses. And I'm sure that contributes to the different student diversity. So from a general and academic perspective, what do you think makes VCOM special, and why do you think students should consider VCOM over other schools?
Yeah, that is a really good question, and I'm going to steal something. I've been interviewing prospective medical students, and they had a really good assessment of the VCOM campuses that they seem to, when they teach the students, it's not just teaching the students to stay in that exact city. So, you know, with Auburn, Spartanburg, Blacksburg, Monroe, Louisiana, that they're actually teaching those students to actually stay in the entire state, which was a great assessment. And I really like how that student did put it. It's actually true. So not only the globally minded, our mission trips, unfortunately, have been put on hold with COVID, but the community focus, and not just that community, it's any community in need.
That's amazing. Thank you for sharing that. So do you get a lot of students who are from the area in Virginia, or for any of the campus, do you feel like most of the students are from that region?
We do. We look for them in-state, and I do not know the statistic offhand, but I know our current class has, each year we get a few more. So not only there, but the Mississippi Delta in the southeastern part, and most of them will very likely stay in the areas, which as you know, are more rural as you get into the states where the schools are located.
Okay, sounds good. So we're talking a little bit about those areas. So can you talk a little about VCOM's affiliates and like what types of hospitals the students will rotate through and have experiences with?
Good question. It is a mix. Mostly they're community-based hospitals. We're looking at between 200 and 400 bed hospitals. However, each campus and area has slightly larger academic centers that our students train in. So mostly they're community-based hospitals.
Okay. Sounds good. All right. So what are your primary roles and responsibilities as an Associate Dean of Clinical Affairs?
We, my entire team and myself, we prepare the second year students to become third years. So making sure that they've have comprehensive reviews and met requirements to move on. And then in the third year, we prepare them to go into clinical rotations. So there's courses for that, in addition to getting them introduced to their options for their course site training. And then in those course sites, at each one of those, we have a director of student medical education, as well as a site coordinator. So that keeping connected with them at the school level with them for that communication is important. And then connecting them to the students on a daily basis. And hopefully everything goes well. And then they do a great job. And then they progress on into their fourth year, which brings a new set of requirements in tasks to complete. So we basically maintain, in the very simplest way, the core sites.
Okay. Oh, that's great. That's good to hear. And I'm sure that, you know, has its own approach, and it's a way to make sure the students are involved and make sure that you guys are able to contribute your best resources so that they can have the maximum amount of success. All right. So another question that we have is, what factors played a role in your decision? Going to start that over. What factors played a role in your decision to be involved in academic medicine?
Everybody's journey is different, but I don't think most of us who ended up in academic medicine woke up one day and be like, wow, this would be great. So my mentor, one of them from a long time ago, had recommended me for a program director position at a new DO program, and I didn't know any different, and he said it would be fun, and that is true. So it was kind of an accident, and probably most would say that too. It wasn't like I graduated from medical school. I was in private practice for about 3 years after residency before I was asked to be part of this new program, and so it was thrilling, but it certainly wasn't a career goal or something that I thought a lot about after I finished residency.
Gotcha. All right, that makes sense, and I'm sure a lot of physicians can probably identify like with that experience with that as well. Great. Okay, so let's shift gears a little bit and talk a little bit more about your journey to becoming a physician. Can you tell us about where you went to college and when you decided to become a physician?
I went to Gannon University in Erie, Pennsylvania, the frozen north, I like to call it. I am a first-generation college graduate, so I had no formal role modeling in terms of pre-med. That was always my goal, and then entering medical school. So I'm very proud of that. I love my parents, very supportive. I grew up actually in a very small town, not as small as some, but still it was a town about 8,000. So everything kind of started there. I didn't want a big university, but it was successful, and Gannon, to make the plug, gave me great tools and skills to keep moving.
That's good to hear. And at what point did you decide on going to an osteopathic school?
There was a DO general surgeon in my hometown, which I never gave much thought about because at that age you don't need generally a general surgeon. But he found out I was interested in medical school along the line, and I shadowed him, and he was phenomenal. Persons tell you about surgeons and their efficiencies and their personalities. He was not like that at all. So that was my first introduction, and being a small town general surgeon, which is a huge responsibility, was just an awe moment. And I don't think he did much OMT in the office, but because he probably didn't have time. But at least how he treated patients and what he told me about his journey was very, very helpful.
That's really great. I'm glad you had that experience. All right, so where did you end up going to medical school, and what was your experience like there?
So I never left Erie. I went to Lake Erie College of Osteopathic Medicine, and they were just opening the school. So I was in the inaugural class at the Erie campus, and they since have other campuses. And it was very different. Like, I didn't have an expectation, but it required a lot of independence and, I guess, how do I say this? Responsibility. So we did not have core sites like they exist now. I just got in the car and I started my 30 rotations, went to New York, scheduled rotations, Pennsylvania, Ohio, Michigan, because I just had to go there. I don't know why. But I traveled around and it was helpful in the sense that I ruled out where I wanted to do residency or where I wanted to train. And most of it wasn't location. I grew up in a small town. It didn't matter. Anything was bigger and better and exciting. But it certainly did matter about the leadership, how the residents were treated, which means how the students were treated. So I'm glad it was difficult. It was a lot of work, but it was good to kind of get a sense of what was out there for somebody who really didn't travel a lot in her youth.
Gotcha. And I'm sure a lot of pre-med students have those thoughts in mind too, so thank you for sharing that. Okay, So another topic is, what main factors played a role for you in deciding a specialty, and how did you ultimately choose that specialty?
It sounds not very exciting, but I loved all ages. I love the kids. I'm not very tall, so I can relate to kids, I think, well from a size perspective. But I just love the new moms, the newborn baby, newborn nursery. I don't know why. Crying babies, but that was a place where I felt at home. And I appreciated, since I had many elderly family members, I appreciated the older age group and what they went through. I saw how my mom took care of her mom and then an uncle. So it was just kind of, I liked everything. I enjoyed when I could have a variety in my day. And that's just what drew me to family medicine. I could pretty much do everything every day.
Right. No, that makes sense. That makes sense. Awesome. So you chose family medicine, and how did you end up choosing your residency program?
I was still in Ohio at the time training, and I transitioned. I wanted to stay local. I did it. I know many students do. I had no desire to really travel far and away when what I could get was nearby. So part of it was economical, and there were very good programs near me, so they accepted me, and then I stayed there for 2 decades until I moved farther south.
Gotcha. And how was your residency experience, like, overall?
It was a larger hospital, so a little bit different than what I had had trained in my internship. It used to be a traditional rotating internship. As a resident of Pennsylvania, I had to do one of those. So I had some experience, but the hospital had, thankfully, as a large hospital, many DOs on staff, all specialties. And as long as you basically, you know, could do the work and working with the other residency programs there and the program directors, honestly, it was an easy transition. And many were intrigued and interested in the osteopathic way, which was kind of nice too. Show off our skills and let them know that, you know, this is actually helpful. Much research, as you know, keeps coming out that, you know, this was a good way to go as a treatment option. And I felt it was well received. So I think I'm one of the lucky ones, to be honest, for a time and when I trained.
That's great. And I'm sure a lot of DO residents would love to, you know, have that appreciation of that way of treating patients. So that's great. Okay, so How would you say that being an osteopathic physician has impacted your personal philosophy and practice and as a physician?
Students are taught and should always be that there's always more to the story. And what persons don't realize is that there is more to the story to take care of that patient. In mental, physical sense, but also over time. And I learned that just one visit or even 5 visits, it was going to take time to get to know the patient. And students will find this out when patients are readmitted or, you know, if they have mostly an office practice, when they keep coming in. It's been endless in many examples of a patient I'd seen, you know, for, you know, 5 or 6 times. And then it's like, oh, Huh, one of those things where you can't say out loud, like, that would have been good to know, but if you don't ask. So I think part of the training is, and not to pepper them with questions, but to kind of, you know, ask questions with the answers that you get and kind of putting together this puzzle. And it takes a while. I mean, unless you're really good with puzzles. Me, I'm so-so. But I think it's the fact that there's just always more to the story. And then as you meet new patients, then it's exciting, and it's a journey that you know won't end just with that one visit.
That's such a great perspective. Thank you so much for sharing that. Okay, so switching gears again a little bit. So what is one attribute about yourself or your superpower that you feel has helped you to become a successful physician?
I do not procrastinate. And I know persons, I do not procrastinate. So things that signatures, there was a time where there was a lot of paperwork, and there's a lot of paperwork now, but there was a lot of paper for paperwork, and I just didn't procrastinate. I set a schedule for medical records. When we had to go down and sign them, I would go every other Thursday. Luckily, I had a schedule. I know, becoming a third or fourth year medical student, every day is different. Every month is different. Residency the same way. You know, you're constantly busy. But finding times in those times to get your work done, and then deciding, I feel this is important. Is it a 10-minute task or is it a 2-hour task? And so identifying, not procrastinating, and then identifying how long it takes me to do something. And you've got a 40-year career ahead of you as a student, so you do get more efficient. It's not all doom and gloom and, oh, it's impossible. It really is, and it's an adaptability. But don't procrastinate, and I'm a pretty fast reader.
That's great. I'm sure that's a very helpful tool.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
Awesome. All right, so can you share with us one piece of advice that you were given by a mentor that you felt was most impactful and that you would pass on to other students?
This probably has a lot of meaning, but at one time, and thankfully I got a lot of good advice. I must have taken it and done well because I can't remember some of it, but the DO world is very small, the DO profession, and I've seen it happen. Seems like you're always running into somebody who's a DO, and it's like a long-lost friend. I always want to know, where do they go to school, you know, what specialty, how they got there. So it always stirs up conversation when I meet a fellow DO. I don't know why. I mean, MD colleagues are fantastic, but when I meet a fellow DO, it just reminds me of how small our profession is and just how tight-knit we are. And I know they're curious as well. So it's a great way to live and practice from what I've seen so far, and to represent well. So even though I'm a DO, but I need to always act like a DO. Sure, you need to act like a physician. And however, I feel that being an osteopathic physician makes me feel, all right, just a little more important. There, I said it. And I'm grateful for all the osteopathic physicians around me and leadership training and these conferences and getting education as I go on in my career, with these conferences and any other big osteopathic events that they have. I'll be there.
That sounds great. Amazing. So thank you so much, Dr. Amato, for talking with us today. Do you have anything else that you would like to share to pre-med students or medical students that are listening to our podcast?
Always keep applying and keep studying and don't procrastinate.
We appreciate you sharing with us your experience and your insights, and thank you so much.
Thank you.
This concludes our episode of Do or Do Not. Send all inquiries, comments, suggestions, and even let us know if there's someone you want us to interview to doordonotpodcast@gmail.com. Don't forget to like us on Facebook at Do or Do Not Podcast for updates. If you enjoyed our podcast, please share it with your classmates and administration. We have plenty of more interviews lined up, and we're excited to share them with you. This is Tianyu Shea. Thank you guys so much for listening to Do or Do Not.